This, here are the sheets.
Everyone, please. Everyone.
Take a sheet. I mean, 30 of these. So.
Yeah. That way you can pass them around. Got it? Good.
Yep.
Okay.
One sheet. Okay. Part of what makes Yiddishkeit different from other religions is it's a product of direct revelation, mass revelation, not based on philosophy. I do have a rule in my chugno either. Okay? It's not based on philosophy. It's not based on conceiving of Hashem and exploring Hashem. It's based on that one seminal moment of Har Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tana Glesa, Baran Kvodech al Har Sinai, Hashem revealed himself to us. Mass revelation, not in a dream, someone had, Muhammad, and someone did magic. It's based on a direct encounter between a large community of millions of people and HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a way that was certifiable, undeniable, wasn't hallucinatory. If I say Hashem spoke to me tonight, you think I'm a little bit crazy, you can sign me to the funny farm. But when 3 million people speak directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's already authentic, verifiable. And that's the moment. That's the moment that we succumb to, that we submit to, that we orient our lives around. But is there anything else? Is there any other part about it, of our avodas Hashem? And this is something that Rav Amital spoke about a lot, as did Rav Lichtenstein. I'm sure maybe I'll thread a little bit of Rav Lichtenstein into this, but Rav Amital certainly spoke about, what about the natural world that Hashem created? When I say the natural world Hashem created, I mean the world around us, nature, science, physics, the world that we live in, and even more so, more importantly, what about the natural world within us? We know and we sense in our hearts that we have a purity, an integrity, an inner morality. We want to be good people. We want to be virtuous people. And we sense that those feelings exist independent of whether we know Shulchan Aruch better or worse, and how well we study the Torah, and how well we understand Har Sinai, because we feel it innately. We also know people who aren't part of Har Sinai, and just are good people. And there's a prerogative, there's an instinct to be a kind person, to be a moral person, to do what's right, to be ethical, to be compassionate. So is Har Sinai ignoring that? That basically we ignore all that? Har Sinai just takes all that raw material and elevates it and frames it with Hashem's directly revealed will? Or is there this other system called natural, normal, human morality? And Rav Amital obviously felt that there was, and he traced it, and then he developed some ideas that would help us build our lives around it. So, for example, just to trace it, the Gemara says in Erev, and this is a very famous Gemara, it's quoted wildly and broadly. The Gemara says, source number one, Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Il Mali Lo Nitna Torah, even if the Torah had never been given, so there's no Har Sinai. Hayinu Lameidim Tznias Mechatol, we could derive Tznias from a cat. Gezel Minamala, we could understand economy, coordination, honesty from an ant, the ant colony, like how honest every ant is, like a coordinated, collaborative. We'd study the Yonah. We'd study doves, and doves are extremely faithful, so there's no intermarriage, there's no wife swapping amongst doves. And Derech Eretz Mitar Nagol, and the sexual mores of chickens would be the template. Okay, so he's listing four base traits. But the implication is we could study the world of nature. If we study the animal kingdom well enough, and of course not just the animal kingdom, but the laws of science and biology and physics and astronomy, we could, because there's no reality outside of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything we live in was created by Hashem. So Hashem didn't create it just as a stage or a platform or backdrop for the real activity, but Hashem embedded or encoded within nature moral lessons. And we could arrive at those moral lessons by studying nature and, of course, by being in tune to the natural voice within us. And for 2,400 years, that's how human beings arrived at Hashem. Chazal talk about the Avos studying Torah, and for sure, and Parshas Toldos, and Batli Yeshiva, and Shem Va'ever, but the Echlid is for sure, but by and large, whatever Torah they studied was not formatted as it is today. By and large, Avram discovered Hashem through science, through the world, through the moral spirit in the world, and he was able to cobble together his relationship with Hashem and his knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there's a 2,500-year world of encountering HaKadosh Baruch Hu before his will is directly revealed to humankind at Har Sinai. And during those 2,500 years, people are held accountable for moral collapse and moral failure. People are punished. What do you mean they're punished? They didn't have any mitzvahs. They didn't have Har Sinai. How could they be held accountable? Evidently, there's a standalone autonomous system that has ramifications, that has demands. And if those demands aren't met, not just because the Dor HaMabul, they weren't smart enough to derive it from nature. They weren't moral enough to just be kind because Hashem created them as kind. Their heart should be just, pure. They shouldn't steal. They shouldn't cheat. They shouldn't be aggressive. And because of that, the Chizkuni says, source number two, Im Tomar, Eich Nen Shu Dahar Mabul. Me'acha Shalom Nitztav, well, mitzvahs, there's no commands. V'yishlom, or yesh kama mitzvahs, shechayav in b'nei Adam l'shamra mikoach svaras adas. It should be intuitive. It should be morally internal. Afa pi Shalom Nitztav, you don't need a command. Well, l'figach Nen Shu, people are punished. People are held accountable. Mokayin. You have a mitzvah not to murder. That mitzvah was given to Noach. He had no mitzvah. So it's not just that Hashem created nature, again, nature being the external nature, but the internal nature also, as a moral guidepost and a moral template, but people held accountable for not drawing even baseline threshold messages and ways of life. Okay. So you can make the argument, okay, that's all pre-Har Sinai. But Har Sinai comes and shaves it all away and erases it all and downloads this whole new system of Hashem's will, which, of course, we know by and large overlaps. Hashem's will isn't antithetical to the basic intuitive morality, but essentially it's all-inclusive. Hashem creates this whole new system called Torah, downloads it onto humanity, downloads it to the Jews, and at least for a Jew, everything before is rendered irrelevant. Rami Tal felt that wasn't true either. To prove it, he quoted a very fascinating halacha gemara. The gemara is questioning what happens to mitzvos that were stated before Har Sinai but weren't repeated in Har Sinai. Most of the mitzvos stated before Har Sinai were repeated. So, for example, Noach was given the issur of retzach, of killing, and in Har Sinai, Hashem told us, lo tirzach. Avram was delivered the mitzvah of mila, himol yimol, and Har Sinai, Hashem said in Parshas Tazria, Bayom Hashmini Yimol Besar Olaso. So normally mitzvahs are repeated. What about a mitzvah such as Gidon Asher? It was stated before Har Sinai, but it was never rearticulated at Har Sinai. Maybe we'll say that Goyim v'chayiv in the mitzvahs because they're still beholden to the pre-Har Sinai system, but Jews were pater because we're only chayiv for the Har Sinai elements. Interesting question. Strikes right at the heart of our philosophical issue. Does Har Sinai replace and supplant, or does Har Sinai advance and augment? So the Gemara has a very, very, almost like shocking response. That's impossible. That's illogical. Let's look at the Gemara. The Gemara says, source number three, line number four from the bottom, Livnei Noach, second to last line. Let's say a mitzvah was delivered to Bnei Noach. V'lo nishneis b'sinai, l'Yisrael. Wasn't repeated at Har Sinai. Nemra, I'm sorry, v'lo nishneis b'sinai, kama. L'Yisrael nemra v'lo livnei Noach. So that the Gemara Paskins, such a mitzvah, strangely enough, only obtains to Jews. That's why Gidon Asher only applies to Jews. It's ironic, but any mitzvah which was stated before Har Sinai and wasn't repeated at Har Sinai is binding on us, not on Goyim. It's a little bit antithetical, but the Gemara says, wait, what about the other? Maybe the other one makes sense. Adarabba, midlo nishneis b'sinai, if a mitzvah wasn't repeated at Har Sinai, livnei Noach nemer lo l'Yisrael. That's how you and I would process it. Gidon Asher should apply to Bnei Noach and not to Yisrael. So the Gemara says, no, that's impossible. Here's the key line. Here's the money shot. Laka midam, there's nothing. It's inconceivable. Laka mile, like midam. There's no concept to the Yisrael shari v'lenach yasser. It's inconceivable that there's something that a Jew, that a guy, a non-Jew, has an isser and a Jew has a heter. It's impossible. We're meant to have more mitzvahs. We're meant to have more chivah. We're meant to have a more regulated and a more regimented life. There is no such notion of a mitzvah that a Ben Noach is obligated to that we're not. We move beyond that. Har Sinai wasn't, because in theory, if Har Sinai replaces pre-Har Sinai, then the two autonomous systems, there's a pre-Har Sinai system and the post-Har Sinai system, and in theory, they don't have to be overlapping, and there could be certain stringencies and impositions in the pre-Har Sinai that don't apply in the post-Har Sinai. So that's impossible. Har Sinai didn't replace. It added. It upgraded. It augmented. Look at Rashi. Rashi has a beautiful language. Source number four. Mishani, lekamidi, to the Yisrael shari, v'lo avdei kochavim aser. Source four. There's nothing that a goy is prohibited in, and a Jew is mutter. And why? Here's Rashi's commentary. Shekeshiyatsu michla b'nei Noach. When we transition from b'nei Noach into Jews, lehiskadei shiyatsu. That transition was to add more mitzvahs and to augment our kedusha v'lo lahakil halam. Not to reduce or to diminish or to detract. So it's impossible for a Jew to have a heter for something which is asur to a guy. Very interesting notion about what it means to be Jewish, and very interesting notion about Har Sinai not replacing, but augmenting. And just to capture through vivid terms before we get to the halacha lemaisa applications of this, something that the Meshech Chachma says, which is fascinating. When Hashem delivers the Torah to Moshe at Har Sinai, so he delivers a package. So let's read the package that's delivered. Like, you know, you get a package in your phone store, data, voice, minutes, SMSs. So Hashem delivers a package. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe alei alai ahara, ve'yesham, source 5, ve'tna lachas luchas ha'even, okay, hatara, okay, you know what that is, mitzvah, roster of mitzvahs, asher kasafti. What does asher kasafti refer to? What does that qualify? So we think it's just qualifying the luchos ha'even and the Torah and the mitzvah that I wrote down. But the Meshech Chachma, Meir Simcha HaKohen, late 19th century Dvinsk, Ukrainian rabbi, leading generation, Ar Samech, writes, Asher Kasavti, he says, Venera, quotes our Gemara in Erevin, that if not for the Torah, there would be alternate, independent, autonomous moral instruction from nature. And then he says, Lachain Emar, incredible concept. Three lines after it begins. Lachain Emar, Asher Kasavti, B'sefer HaTeva, Asher Kasavti. Hashem, as part of the Sinai package, started part of the Sinai package, gave over a Sefer HaTeva. A Sefer HaTeva would mean the ability to draw moral lessons from Sefer HaTeva. Now, whether it's an actual book or just a concept, Hashem said, here's what it takes to be a Jew. Luchas, luchas. Mitzvos, mitzvos. Torah, Torah. And also, make sure that you also, as part of your growth as an Oved Hashem, make sure that this internal, natural, native virtue, nobility, you work at it. Look around you, look inside of you. That's part of Har Sinai. So it's not just that Har Sinai didn't replace pre-Har Sinai, but built on its platform, but part of Har Sinai incorporated. So whatever exists before Har Sinai, that's also part of Har Sinai. And now Har Sinai is Torah, Mitzvah, Luchos, as well as Sefer HaTeva, which is a very powerful concept, that part of Har Sinai was reinstating and reasserting how primary this form of moral growth is. So it existed before Har Sinai. Har Sinai didn't replace it, it augmented it, it incorporated it. What are some of the practical ramifications about how we should grow as Oved Hashem? It's very interesting philosophically, but how does this translate down tomorrow? You want to be a better Oved Hashem? You're feeling certain things. How does this translate? So a couple of things. Number one, Rav Amital, big Talmud of Rav Kook, Rav Amital held on to Rav Kook throughout the Holocaust. He was always had a sefer, always a tshuva. That, again, this is very theoretical. We'll start with theoretical, then we'll move towards the practical. When you become a better Oved Hashem, it has to make you into a better person. You have to feel like it's broadening you and deepening you and amplifying you as a person, because there's a person there. You're not a robot. You're not a computer. You're not a USB drive. Just download mitzvahs and perform. There's a person with feelings and virtue and nobility and kindness. And you always want to know whether you're growing in your Avodas Hashem. Is it the right type of Avodas Hashem or the toxic type of Avodas Hashem? Because there's Yerush Shemayim and Firmkeit that's toxic. It's showy. It's exhibitionist. It's contentious. It's arrogant. And sometimes it can, you go off the rails because it's so powerful. So what's your metric? What's your yardstick to know whether this is real, authentic Yerush Shemayim? Is it the best version of you? Does being an Oved Hashem make it the best version of you? And if it makes you a lesser version of you, then it's Har Sinai without that lower template, without that more basic template. Now, it's hard to gauge because it's very contextual, very cultural. What makes you the best person may be different than what makes a Haredi person the best person or a Milba. Every context is different. You can't superimpose your yardsticks. But do you feel like it's part of your humanity and you're becoming a better human, not just a more firm, general, smarter, kinder, more dignified, more compassionate, wiser? There's no mitzvah to be wise. There's no mitzvah to be kind. There's mitzvah to perform chesed. Are you a kind person? Are you a respectful person? And just if you made a list of the 10 traits you'd want in a better human being, do you feel that your Avodas Hashem is helping you arrive at those traits? If not, then it's a little, yes. Okay? So for example, let's read Rav Kook in Oros HaKodesh. Although you have to read Rav Kook very, very, very slow because the Hebrew is very dense and poetic, but I just chose two easy ones. Im Tetzuya, Yerush Shemayim. If you found the type of Yerush Shemayim, that without Yerush Shemayim affecting your life, that your life would be better and more virtuous. So without Yerush Shemayim, you'd be a better person. I'm skipping a line, but now that you're being influenced by Yerush Shemayim, then the entire ability is now becoming diminished. You're less kind, you're less good, you're less tov. Rav Kook calls that Yerush Shemayim kazos hi yira psula. That's Yerush Shemayim psula. And the converse is, the next page, next slide, Simon le Yerush Shemayim Tehora, what is indicative of healthy and pure Yirat Shamayim, Kshehamusar HaTivi, here you go, Musar HaTivi, that natural, instinctual morality, Hanatua B'teva HaYashar Shel Adam, which is embedded in human integrity and human kindness and human virtue. If that is, here it is, Holech V'Ola Alpia, it's augmenting and growing B'malos Yoter Gvaos, it's expanding based on the influence of Yirat Shamayim, then that's considered Yirat Shamayim Tahara. So this is very theoretical, but I think when you talk about it, that's really good. Like, I want to think, are you a better person today than you were 3 months ago? You know more Torah, hopefully you keep mitzvahs more carefully, more information, more commitment, more passion towards Har Sinai, but how is that affecting the pre-Har Sinai in you, the humanity within you? And is it making that a better you? And I hope and I think that in this yeshiva is something you feel very tangibly, because we're trying to work on as many parts of whom you are, not just more learning, more davening, more tzedakah, more mikvah, but like, are you just a better person? Because that is reflective of a better Yirat Shamayim, and that will help you grow in Yirat Shamayim. Now, what about practical issues? So practically, you could condense all the nafkaminos that sometimes when you do mitzvos, you have to do mitzvos, not because of a command, or not only because of a command, but something that just makes sense as a human being. So let me give you what the Street of Age said, Rabbi Yaakov Yechiel Weinberg, very interesting figure. World War II, went through World War II, concentration camps, lived in Switzerland afterwards, a very interesting person. Not enough time to describe him because I want to dedicate time to this topic. He asked a very famous question. Why don't we recite a brachas and mitzvah when performing chesed? Can you imagine how many brachas you'd recite? Every minute you perform a chesed, you make a bracha. Kibud avayim, staka, chesed, helping. It'd be incredible. You'd have not mere brachas b'chayam, but elef brachas b'chayam. So it's a very famous question. The Rashba talks about it. The Chassam Sofer talks about it. But the Sri Deish says the following. Because if you recited Asher Kiddushanu B'mitzvos V'tzivanu Lasos Chesed, then you would be implying the reason you're performing Chesed is because of Tzivui. The reason you should perform Chesed is pre-Tzivui. The only reason you're performing Chesed is because you have a commandment on the books. What about virtue? What about kindness? What about being a good, upright person? You can't condense every decision in life into whether there's a mitzvah or halacha. That's the key point. And today we live, Baruch Hashem, in a period of greater halachic scrupulousness and adherence. But the danger is that people feel uncomfortable demanding of themselves when it can't be attached to a halacha. And there are demands in life that aren't halachic. And those are just as mandated and just as obligatory. Let me give you an example. About 2 years ago, I was in a more Haredi-oriented community for Shabbos. And evidently, they had plumbing issues. People were overstuffing the toilets. People were using too much toilet paper. Whatever. Community bathrooms tend to be abused. Plumbing isn't great. A lot of people use them. Toilet paper runs out. Use paper towels. All sorts of malfunctions. So the bathroom and the area near the bathroom were plastered with signs. And those signs read, it's usher to use too much toilet paper, it's gzela. It's usher to use paper towels because it will clog the toilet and we'll have to pay for a plumber. It's usher to usher. And I asked myself, isn't it unfortunate? I mean, shouldn't it be discouraged because it's not fair, it's not proper, it's not polite to the next person? Like, does it have to be usher in order? This is a very dangerous world. If the only yardstick and the only metric for behavior is with this usher and mutter, you know that black hole you could fall into. And there's certain types of behaviors just aren't appropriate, even if it's not usher. Remember, as a young smicha student, I was walking home one night at YU. Those of you who've ever visited YU, YU is it's almost like a valley, a wind tunnel, because it's on the northern tip of Manhattan, and your yarmulke is blowing off. And YU had just put up flags. This was in the 80s, and YU had very little school patriotism. So they put these big banners, YU. And the winds were ripping down Amsterdam Avenue. And all of a sudden, boy, with a lot of religious passion, a younger boy, Rebbe, let me ask you a question. The flagpoles are swirling in the wind. Do I have a chiyuv to call security? So I remember telling him, I don't know if you have a chiyuv, but I think it's a good idea. You think the flagpole's going to fall and hurt someone. And you can't stream everything through halacha or non-halacha. That has to be the baseline. That has to be the first question we'll talk about in a moment. So, hey, how do we make our decisions? How do we render our decisions? Is the only set of codes, halacha codes, are there other codes? I'll talk a little longer because I don't imagine that Sharm is going to come. I don't know what's going to happen. But very famous Rav Aaron story. Rav Aaron story. I'll say the core, and then I'll get to other stories if Rav Sharm comes a little late. But all that being said, there's a lot to talk about here. And obviously, if you want to read more, it's this piece called Musar Tivi and Rav Amital's Marts and some of the Adam's extensive dealing with this. However, all that being said, the following boundaries have to be kept. We want to be sensitive to moral impulse. We want to be sensitive. We want to perform mitzvahs not only because of tzivui. There are times where, but when push comes to shove and those two systems clash, the Har Sinai system, Hashem's directly revealed will, and our own, this is really important to listen to, and our own internal clock, our own internal morality, there's no wiggle room. You can question, you can ask, you can wonder, you can search for a solution, but when they clash, the litmus test of orthodoxy is you submit to Hashem's Ratzon. And one person gets it right, and one person gets it wrong. Shaul gets it wrong, because he's struggling with this fearsome demand to commit genocide. And source number 9 has him making a Kal Vachomer. He's a Lamdan, he's a Brisker. He says, Hashem is so worried about human life that even if a John Doe dies in the forest, we make this whole big ceremony called Egla Rufa. Whole big song and dance. If any of you, Chas Hashem, were to go missing, you wouldn't be a Egla Rufa candidate. Why? Because within 2 hours, there'd be people searching for you, your family, your bane, your friends. If Chas Hashem, something happened, we'd find you, we'd identify you. Your body won't be lying in the forest. Whose bodies lie in the forest? Homeless people, drug addicts, prostitutes. People live on the fringes of society. They don't have family. They don't have friends. They don't have caretakers. So you'd think just bury the body in the ground and get done with it. But it's particularly at the moment that the dignity of the human life is so vulnerable that we have to reinforce it. We have to say, dafka for this drug addict, dafka for this prostitute, we're going to make an entire ceremony, song and dance, Yom Kippur Katan, both towns. So Shaul can't reconcile that, the dignity of the human condition, and then I'm going to kill an entire nation. So he balks and he flinches. And then Abascal comes out and says, don't be too big a tzaddik. You think you're such a big tzaddik. You're imposing your moral sense to even HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You live 50 years, 100 years, 200 years, 500 years. Hashem spans all of society, all of eternity. And we have to believe in our heart of hearts that if Hashem issues a command, it is moral. In ways that we just can't understand based on our own moral compass. We have a pretty good moral compass, but it's not the total and complete moral compass. If I sent you back with a gun in your hand to Vienna of 1920, and you knew, again, this is hypothetical, and you'd meet Adolf Hitler walking down the street, every wise person, every morally sound person, if you knew, again, you can't know, but if you knew, shooting Adolf Hitler would be the most moral act you can commit, because you would spare 150 million people's lives with one bullet. Again, hypothetically, you can never justify, because you never, but let's say in theory, I could change history and go, can you imagine 150 million more people lived over the last 60 years? And you could spare all the suffering and all the pain and all the... You just don't... I just want to finish. You just don't know. So Shaul fails, and Avram succeeds, because Avram's facing that same moment at the Akedah, and there's no way for him to reconcile Hashem's will with human instinct and killing my son and sacrificing. And I think I gave this year in Vayera. If not, I'll give this year some other point in the Amital's way of reading the Akedah. Internally he struggles, and internally he churns, and he dabbles Hashem to rescind the Akedah, and it's all... Internally, Hashem wants us to question. That's why he gave us moral conscience. He wants us to strive and to question. But when push comes to shove, you can't budge. That's what makes halacha halacha. There is no wiggle room. There's no budging. There's no movement. If it's usher, it's usher. That is, when something is usher, your knees shake. Your knees tremble. You don't say, well, it doesn't seem that way, and it riles my human instincts. You can question. Hashem wants you to question, and Avram questions, but he's ready. He says, you know, he's crying. Source number 10, he's at the Akedah, and he's crying. This week's Parsha, according to one day in Chazal, that's why Yitzchak goes blind, because Avram's tears, and everyone's crying, the Malachim are crying. So when push comes to shove, there really is no wiggle room. And this is an important lesson in our day. I hate to keep saying this, but I have to give you guys the tools to deal with it. But that this is literally the homosexual issue. I believe in my heart of hearts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it usher, and there's a moral statement there, and it's usher. On the other hand, Hashem created genetic tendencies, as far as science has proven now, 3% of the population towards homosexuality. How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu create that? That's something that's usher. I don't know. And Hashem wants me to struggle with that. But chas v'shalom, not to say because 3% of the population has tendencies, and they're normal, healthy, regular people like you and me. There's no difference between myself and them. Because of that, therefore, we can sanction certain actions. Because Hashem said it's us. And when Hashem says it's us, whether you're at the Akeda, whether you're Shah, whether it's 2019, or whether it's your own personal life, you don't budge, and you still believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a reason that you may never uncover. I've lived 53 years. I'm starting to uncover more of the reasons that I didn't understand in the past. But there's still a lot of things I don't understand. But I know that Chinese is toxic for me. I know that shellfish is toxic for me. I know that eating chametz on Pesach is toxic for me. And I know I'll probably never understand why to that degree. So even though you want these two systems to complement each other, when they clash, it's no multiple choice here. Now, in the internal world, struggle, question, ask, try to find. But in terms of the world of action, there's no move. There's no room. A lot of questions. Yeah.
Is that the sort of thing about the going in the past and what allowed to like kill Hitler? But wasn't that in the talk we had with like a couple of posts ago with Yishmael, where he was judged for at the time, even though he was
getting right. Because you're not going backwards. You're correct. Because you still give Yishmael the chance to do. That's why it's hypothetical. Yishmael is still the truth. But assuming we took out all those variables, and I now know what happened, and Hitler's dead, and he didn't do tshuva, and he killed 150 million people. So if I can go back and rewrite history without taking away freedom of choice, that's why Eli's hypothetical. But in theory, and Hashem knows what the story will be, and therefore plans accordingly. However, okay, this is one of the most famous Gush legends ever. However, what if you're not violating halacha based on human impulse? What if you're already in a halachically compromised situation? And now the question is not to pass over from the boundary of halachic fidelity to the boundary of halachic infraction. Am I already in the boundary of halachic infraction? Can I use moral impulse to determine which halacha should violate? That was a famous conversation. If you're stuck on a desert island and you have two choices. Because you already have to eat something else. In fact, not just you're allowed to, you have to. Now you're operating within halachic legality. You have to eat. So on the one hand, I could eat treif meat, which is iser lav, but normal. Or I could eat human flesh, which is less of an iser here, less of an iser, but it's disgusting, it's repulsive. So you would think we just calculate purely halachically. You should eat the human meat, which is less iser, but repulsive. Rav Amital quoted the grandson, the great-grandson of the Chassam Sofer, who said that here you can. So you're not using human impulse to override halacha. Is even an impulse to recalculate which halacha you violate. Or there's another case he quoted, which is an interesting case. This case is a little different. That was a famous case. We made such a famous Gush moment because it so typified Rav Amital's approach. Then we ran over to Rav Aaron. So Rav Amital said he would eat the pig meat because he would allow human impulses and human discretion to influence halacha calculus. We ran over to Rav Lichtenstein, Ramish, right then he said he would eat the human flesh. And there was no controversy. There was no, oh my goodness, two Rosh Yeshivas, which is just the most natural thing. Then each Rosh Yeshiva, and it reflected each Rosh Yeshiva. It was like, I could have guessed who would say what. It wasn't, oh my goodness, he said that. It reflected what we expected. It was just a very powerful moment in the Gush lore. Anyway, let's stop here because I hear outside. Yes?
As in, of course, in the case of, there's obviously that.